This is the e-learning podcast, episode number 68.
We would like to work with low-income communities. It will be great if we teach them, for instance, English or Italian or French, whatever. But when we went there, we figured out that they don't know how to read or write in Spanish, our mother tongue. So we detected a problem of literacy. And if someone, if a children or their parents don't know how to read and write, they are going to be left behind.
Welcome to the e-learning podcast. My name is Latic, and I'm your host from LMSPulse.com. My guest for today is Diana Suarez, a true lover of languages and founder of Glot.org in Medellin, Colombia. GLOT is an initiative that uses evidence-based impact methodologies and volunteer-based tutoring for language learning and to advance literacy. The ability to speak another language, or languages, if you want to earn the polyglot status, get it, GLOT.org, is undoubtedly still one of those valuable professional skills you can have, even in our modern world with instantaneous translation. As such, the focus of today's conversation comes from Deanna's original concept for forming GLOT, which is, what if we made language learning possible for everyone, particularly low-income learners? In this educational conversation, Deanna and I talk about the joys of language learning and its struggles, when you realize that your target audience is below par when it comes to literacy in their own mother tongue. We also talk about why Deanna is a believer in evidence-based interventions and why she decided to base her work on the approach called teaching at the right level. We also take a deep dive on GLOT's programs for literacy, online learning, interpretation, and more, and why foreigners should consider volunteering as a language tutor in Medellin for their next holiday. We also talk about how Deanna leveraged open source technologies to deliver online learning to communities without internet access. And then finally, we talk about Deanna's vision for a self-sustaining, universally accessible, and data-driven learning language approach, and her current plans to accomplish it. But before we get started, a quick word from our sponsors.
The e-learning podcast is sponsored by the e-learning Success Summit. Learn from more than 40 experts how to teach, work, and learn online without being overwhelmed. Get your free ticket to the summit at elearningsuccesssummit.com. And LMSPulse.com, your best source for news, information, and resources for e-learning professionals for more than 10 years. Get our free roundup of the week's top news at LMSPulse.com.
Hello, Deanna. Welcome to the e-learning podcast. How are you today?
Really good. Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. Deanna, where do we find you standing or sitting today?
I am right now in Medellin, Colombia. Beautiful Medellin, Colombia.
Medellin, Colombia. Fantastic. Deanna, you are the CEO, the director of an organization called GLOT, which, as I found out, and I should have known in the, you know, when we're doing a little bit of warm up before we did this interview here, that it's the Greek word for languages, which makes sense when you talk about polyglot, many languages, of course. Excellent. Tell us, give us the 30 seconds on who you are and why GLOT, you know, what GLOT does in as an organization.
Perfect. My name is Deanna. I am passionate about languages. That's why GLOT. So what we do is provide opportunities related to languages. What I mainly do is to give back.
Mm. Okay. So that's interesting. I need to unpack the word. So what does GLOT do? Like why was this an important organization to start? Is this something that Medellin really, really needs? Or is this a global facing organization? What specific niche does it fill? And why start a new organization? Why was that important?
Yes, actually we started this organization because I had a job crisis. I was like, I have my job, but my heart was empty. So I decided to turn my passion and talent into something meaningful. And real. So we created this NGO, GLOT. We started here in Medellin, Colombia, and we mainly do is provide opportunities related to languages. Something important is that we're not a normal, second language organization. No. What we do is, for instance, to promote literacy among children, because if they don't know how to read and write, how second language will be promoted? or lifelong learning. So this is what we mainly do. Right now, we are an international and nonprofit organization. So we are step by step growing.
Fantastic. Tell us about, like, what does your user base look like right now? Are you working in several countries, or do you have what sort of courses do you have? What sort of users do you have? And, you know, what does going rapidly mean?
Perfect. We mainly work here in Colombia, but we have volunteers and people involved from all over the world. We have partners in Mexico, in United States, in United Kingdom, even in Africa. So it's something global because there is a need to promote a quality education, but also to promote cultural awareness and understanding. So the means to do that is through languages.
Mm. So as you're promoting languages, you're basically doing that through literacy. So what's the importance of literacy? Tell me about, you know, the program that you've created that I learned about called Literacy Plus. Yes. I think that's probably what you call it. Tell us about that and why is that so important?
Yes, well, I will say that we started like saying like, okay, we would like to work with low-income communities. It will be great if we teach them, for instance, English or Italian or French, whatever. But when we went there, we figured out that they don't know how to read or write in Spanish, our mother tongue. So we detected a problem of literacy. And if a children or their parents don't know how to read and write, they are going to be left behind. So that's a specific problem. So we started working with those low-income communities. What we did with the program Literacy Plus is to adapt an impact methodology from India. We adapted to the Colombian context and start making some pilots, how it goes here in Colombia, if it works or not. Mm-hmm. For us, it's super important to learn about what we do.
So how did you find an impact methodology in India and then adapt it to Colombia?
Well, I first learned it, studying it in 2013. And then I got like obsessed. If it's something that works like there and with evidence, why not to bring this methodology to our context, to test if it works here or not. And then I started like reading and adapted this methodology here.
Mm. What kind of evidence are you using? I'm interested that there's this evidence-based approach. Like, so what's the model that you use for evaluating progress and understanding, you know, learner outcomes and behavior change and those kinds of things?
Well, we implement like the logical framework. So we say what is the change we would like to see with this intervention. And with children it's so easy because the methodology is so easy because we test them at the beginning and at the end of the intervention. And like that we can see their progress, if there is a progress. And we actually in 2019 find out that there is progress. Mm-hmm. And there is a correlation among children that attend really well the program.
Okay, excellent. How long is the program? Is it days? Is it weeks? Is it month? Is it a full school year? Like what kind of program would I be expecting if I was like a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old?
Well, it's a program about of 2 months if it's only literacy, but we added other 2 months with math because those two are basic skills. So we have a program of about 4 months.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. You just threw math in the mix. I didn't expect that to come in. Very cool. So why, you know, I want to kind of go back to the business model. Why did you choose the nonprofit, you know, structure for your organization rather than a for-profit structure?
Well, it's a great question. And I decided to make another nonprofit to make sure that our income, our revenue get back to the cost.
Okay.
So I wanted to make sure that we can have a revenue model, we can have a social impact model, but to make sure that it will be invested again in the communities that need it. Mm. That's why we decided.
And how's that ultimately grow, or what's the plan for development outside of Medellin, right? So as you, you know, I guess let's step back for that for 1 second. Who's paying for these courses right now? Are the, when you're going to low-income communities, I'm assuming that they are not able to afford this training. So where does your funding come from?
Yes, that's a great question. And it's like we have a social business model. So for them, we offer them this project for free. They cannot afford it. But there are organizations, mainly international organizations, that are interested in what we do. They are interested in learning if they really have an impact. And mainly we got resources for that program for donations or big organizations that can pay for that. But also we have different, as a social business model, we have different services that companies or people pay for it. And they love to pay for that. I will say why, because part of the payment goes to the literacy program. So they know that by having a service they need, they are also impacting low-income communities.
Mm. So you're really actually a social enterprise is what you are. So what are those other products and services that people buy that you've put out there?
Yes, one of the main, all of them are related to languages. So one of them is called mentoring. What we do with mentoring is people who struggle to learn a second language, they can learn it with us, but in a different way, in a human-centered approach. So what we do with that is teach them how to learn a second language. And also they interact with people from different cultures and different countries. Another service is interpretation. So companies, and right now it's a boom with virtual conference, for instance, they pay for interpretation and part of it goes to the literacy program.
Hmm. Wow. It's how many, like, give me a sense, how many staff do you have right now? How many people are actually implementing all these? Or is this an army of one?
It's around 15 people.
15 people. That's awesome. Congratulations. That is fantastic.
Thank you.
The next, you know, kind of thought that I have is that, you know, in many places in the world where low-income people are, internet connectivity is not accessible. It's not available. And so delivering a program online in these areas is a challenge. So first of all, does your target market with the literacy program, do they have access to the internet?
No, and not at all.
Not at all. Okay. So what do you do? Like, how do you deliver an online program offline?
Yes, that was a challenge with the COVID-19 situation arise, because it was how we are going to continue working with them if they don't have devices, if they don't have connectivity, they don't even have food. So how we're going to change our program to deliver something that they need specifically. And what we did last year specifically was, okay, we're going to reach them. We need some kind of technology. And we find out an application called Colibri by Learning Equality. And this is an offline application that can work as a Moodle, but offline. So what we do is to create all the modules to train the trainers. Then we can reach trainers and then they can deliver our implementation. And with that change in our model, in the Literacy Plus program, we won a prize last year of innovation.
Who'd you win the innovation prize from?
From SUMA. It's a laboratory of innovation on education from Chile.
Oh, wow. Super. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And so does this, you know, now that you've discovered the trainer of trainers model and the effectiveness of that model, is that how you're going to move things forward indefinitely now, or that you've completely just sort of pivoted?
Well, right now this year we made a pilot implementation to test how trainers go with this platform. We have some evidence. Actually, we work with a researcher from UK, because we want to make our decisions based on data. So with that is how we can improve our logical framework, specifically with this change, with this offline platform. And the idea is to scale and also grow that program.
Mm. Well, the one question I did not ask you at the beginning, which I normally do, is what is the COVID situation in the Medellin area in Colombia right now? Is everything open and accessible, or what's the story?
Yes, right now it's open. Right now is like the vaccination is going on, and it's like we have cases, but not as high as it used to be like 5 months ago.
Okay. And so does that mean that you're able to implement your trainings again in person, or are you still operating solely online?
Well, when we started this program in April, we not only had problems with COVID-19 crisis, but also we have a social crisis. We had the strikes, we have clashes. So it was impossible to go there and implement the methodology with teachers. But at the end of June, we started to implement it at least in person, like with all biosecurity stuff. So we run it right now like a blended model.
What sort of innovations do you see yourself implementing going forward? Is there going to be additional pieces to the literacy program? Are there going to be adult learner programs? Other, what are the, what's like the 2 or 3 year vision out for you in terms of how Glot will continue to grow?
Well, we want to grow, but we want to grow with something that really impacts positively the lives of many, many children, and also if possible, the life of their communities. Because you mentioned something. What if you work with adults and their parents also that don't know how to read and write? And if we have some kind of those needs in their community, it will be amazing if we can have a solution also for them. But the idea for us is to scale this program to have evidence if we can grow. And yeah, I don't know, I want to grow.
So how do you grow? I mean, as a social enterprise, that's dependent upon moving forward these other things, like do you what's your model for doing more translation, working more conferences, offering these other mentoring models and those kinds of things? Is this something that you're out there actively marketing and growing that business as well at the same time?
Well, we have different strategies, and for sure it's like a puzzle how we can connect the pieces to make it possible. Because for instance, okay, we can develop a fundraising strategy, but we don't want to depend only on donations, right? We would like to have a business model that grow itself and it's sustainable, right? So the idea is like, okay, grow, but a little bit, like step by step, right?
Do you have other organizations that you've worked with before, or maybe that you're partnering with right now that have you where you've seen, okay, this is where they started, and now, step by step they've grown?
Could you repeat that? Because it's not it's the partnerships we have, or the model or organization we have.
No, I'm mostly looking, what I was asking about is, do you have models for success? So, do you have other nonprofits or social enterprises or even private sector firms, private companies that you're modeling, that you say, wow, they did it and here's their model for doing that, and that you're mimicking that model? Or is it, are let me ask there, is it, do you have models or mentors yourself?
Yes. Actually, the organization that create the methodology we implement here for us is an amazing model, because it's the way how they have a problem in India, how they found a solution for that, and they scale it to make it public policy. So for us, it's a great example, a great model to implement it, because right now, actually, it's implemented and is a program that is growing in many countries in Africa. So this is my model. I would like to have an organization that grows also something here in Latin America and make it powerful and impactful for many, many, many lives.
How many people is your mentor organization serving?
Well, right now we are serving one community that partnered with us and is a food bank. There is around like 20 to 50 children, specifically in that community. But also we are working with one rural community that has 7 different locations and 13 teachers from that rural schools and around 50 children. Because right now we're piloting a small step by step.
Sure, absolutely. So, but I guess compared to me, like the mentor organization that you were talking about in India, How many people are they serving right now? Is it thousands? Is
millions,
it hundreds?
Millions of children. Yeah. Millions of children in India and Africa.
Wow. That's intense. Are they also not for profit? Are they?
Yes, they are non profit organization.
Super cool.
No, it's possible if we have evidence.
Yeah, of course it's possible. Anything's possible. That's great. What does your, you know, as the founder and the director of this, what does your day-to-day look like as a part of this organization? You know, are you still in the trenches, so to speak? Are you, you know, building the training and teaching the trainers and whatnot, or are you focused now on building the organization, you know, raising funds, those kinds of things?
Great question. Well, what I do with Glot, it's I do it in my spare time. Right, because right now I have a full-time job that I also enjoyed and love, but okay, things with COVID situation get crazy, so I am happy to have this full-time job because it's also a way to fund many things with Glot until it's like self-sustainable. So my day today is like, okay, normally work, but also like this in my spare time or lunchtime or anything, like work with something related to God, but I really enjoy it. It's super. Not something that is like, okay, this happened to me, I don't like it. No, I love it.
Okay. No, that's fantastic. So what do you use as a person now who's passionate about this and who is working to make it sustainable, is your vision to ultimately go and do this full time and have this be your day-to-day operation?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's my vision, and also to create employment for more people.
Mm. And so what kinds of groups and connectivity for yourself and connections do you have in Medellin and around the world to have ideas about how to run a nonprofit, about, you know, just sort of social support, networking, and those kinds of things? Like what's that universe like for someone like yourself?
Well, it is necessary to belong to a network or something that helps you grow. Right now, I am part of the Impact Hub global community. So for entrepreneur issues, for even for nonprofit, for personal issues, it's amazing to belong to that community. Also, like I have amazing friends or people that are leaders, and I follow them, I learn from them. So it's good to have this network and connect with people that really help you like sustain what mm-hmm. you're doing, because sometimes being an entrepreneur is not easy. So it's necessary to have people there like, okay, you can do it. Or if you cannot do it, like also help you with that, because you can struggle with yourself.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask what I hope is not a sensitive question, but what about being an entrepreneur as a woman as well? Do you find that there are special challenges with being a woman entrepreneur, or do you feel like it's a level playing field these days and that you have the same opportunities and the same access and those kinds of things, or maybe better access?
Well, it depends, because it's a great question actually, because it's difficult to be an entrepreneur and to be a woman like leading things, because for instance, here in Latin America, the entrepreneurs or leaders are mostly men. So it's how you work with them or how you interact with them. And sometimes there are comments or there are things that make that environment hard, but also it's a lot of opportunities, because right now with sustainable development goals, with that kind of discourse that we need to empower women, we find out a lot of opportunities for an organization that is led specifically by women. So it depends on the land you see, and it's different perspective. It has been hard, but it's also an opportunity to show that we can do it. But it's not because we are like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain, but I can do it. You can do it. Like everyone can do it.
Sure. Yeah. That you have the opportunity. I find it interesting. We've had several women entrepreneurs on the podcast before, and it's been great to hear their different perspectives about, you know, everything from going and raising funds. You know, some of them are most actually the other women entrepreneurs are, commercial organizations, private organizations, right? So we talked about fundraising, you know, being part of that universe. I'm always interested to see, you know, what that diversity of opinions is. You know, the last question that I always ask everyone on these podcasts is, what are you looking forward to? So as you think about the next 6 months or the next 12 months, are there, you know, is there a shiny new object? Is there a technology? Is there a process? Is there a person that you would, you know, you'd like to tell others about? It doesn't have to be something even in your space. It could be something you just think is really, really cool. Like, what are you paying attention to that you'd like to tell others about?
Well, for me, what I am looking for right now is to grow our organization, but not because it's a selfish desire, but because we really believe what we are doing right now can change many, many lives. So if something is working, why not to scale it? Why not to reach more communities to do good, right?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Diana Suarez, you are the CEO and founder of GLOT, which is an organization that is training, is mentoring, but mostly is promoting literacy. And, you know, especially your passion is promoting literacy in these low-income situations around the world. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the eLearning Podcast. If you like what you heard, please do me the favor of following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or whichever social media you prefer. Also, if you're interested in diving deeper on e-learning, I encourage you to get your free ticket to the e-learning Success Summit, where there are more than 70 hours of presentations on best practices. Just go to elearningsuccesssummit.com. And then finally, for the latest news, information, and resources about e-learning, come subscribe to our newsletter at lmspulse.com. Thanks.